We had a pretty killer block party last week, and I hope we find some time to celebrate all the big things and all the little things that happened, that made that party happen last weekend. One of the little things that happened that may have gone unnoticed was that the folks who brought our bounce house and our bouncy obstacle course bouncing all around, they saw that there were a couple holes in our yard. They were formed, I mean, they're drain tiles. We, you know, the rain from the roof has to go somewhere. So they're naturally there. They've always been there, and they kind of need to be there. But, you know, a few of us might know they're there, but, you know, our neighbors are going to not do that. How much fun is it for us to be walking through our yard or someone else's yard and fall into a hole and sprain our ankle, twist our knee, or maybe, if we're really lucky, fall flat on our face? So bouncing all around put out cones around the holes that were in our yard, which was just a lovely, nice, simple thing to do, something we didn't really think about, and maybe they didn't think too much about either, but it was great to mark those holes. Because let's face it, every single one of our yards, we have holes, opportunities for us to trip up and mess up. Our gospel for today, we are in Luke chapter 16. Jesus begins the story by saying, "There was a certain rich man." If you never have read any words from the Gospel of Luke, if you've never read any of the Gospels or any of the words out of the Bible, if this is the first time you had ever hung out in a space like this, if you're going to hear Jesus, who we're here to listen to, start a story by saying there was a certain rich man, your mind is going to think, yeah, that's the bad guy. It's kind of like, I don't know, like Star Wars. I imagine we've all seen all the movies and we've all seen all the franchise, right? You know Star Wars. Even if you haven't. Even if you've never been to Walmart and Target and seen the little figurines, if you saw Darth Vader for the first time ever, you would say, that's the bad guy. The story seems to be set up that way. Right from the very beginning, we hear about this guy, he's a certain rich man. When we say rich man, we kind of drag that out just a little bit in our minds because this guy is the bad guy. And then Jesus kind of piles it on a bit and says that he really likes silk clothes and purple clothing, which in Jesus' time, those things were expensive, extremely expensive. And beyond that, purple is a color of royalty, so there is a little bit of an air, maybe we're injecting this into the story, but there's a little bit of an air that the rich man sees himself, declares himself royalty, nobility. He's a king, a person of high standing, so as he's walking in the world wearing his purple that no one else can afford, people will give him honor just because he's there. So yeah, we don't like this guy at all. I mean, he's just not great. As an aside, as a point of clarity, throughout the Gospel of Luke, Jesus uses the phrase rich man, and almost every single time it is a negative connotation. The person who is the rich man is going to do something that we don't like, something that goes counter to the kingdom of God. As a point of clarity, Jesus hangs out with wealthy people. If we went to chapter 19, Jesus hangs out with a guy named Zacchaeus. He's the guy who maybe some of us heard when we were much younger. Zacchaeus was a wee little man. Wee little man was he, climbed up in a sycamore tree, that guy. Zacchaeus also happens to be really wealthy. He's got a lot of cash. But he's also incredibly generous with his resources. If we rewound back to chapter 8, we learn about all the boy disciples. Turns out there's women disciples as well. Too bad they don't get a whole lot of standing and credit. But in chapter 8, we learn about them. We learn some of their names. And we find out that Jesus' ministry is supported by some of the women disciples, which means that they have enough independent wealth to support Jesus and 12 boys who are following him around. Jesus hangs out with wealthy people. So it must not just be about whether we have money in our portfolios or our 401s or in our bank accounts or our wallets. It must be something about the way this guy walks in the world, the way that some people walk in the world. It must not just be about cash on hand. It must be also about behavior. There was a certain rich man. He loved purple. He loved linen, silk. He feasted luxuriously every day. And oh, by the way, right outside his gate, his palatial abode where he lived, his mansion on the hill, there was Lazarus. Take note of the fact that we know this guy's name. Put that in the back of our minds. Lazarus is stuck at the gate outside of this rich man's house, and that's where he lives. We don't know how Lazarus got there. We don't know if he was abandoned by his family. We don't know if he was once a runaway, if he's homeless. We don't know if maybe he was dumped there on a bus and he started off in some far-off place. We know that he doesn't have a visa. We know that he doesn't have SNAP card. We know that he doesn't have Medicaid. He has nothing except for his illness. And he's very sick, probably because he's homeless and not being cared for by anyone. So the day comes when Lazarus dies, and apparently the rich man dies on the same day. Lazarus dies, and he's scooped up by the angels of God, and he's taken to, in some translations it will say, the bosom of Abraham, to the very heart, to the very center, being circled and wrapped in the arms of God with compassion and mercy and grace. As we would want if we heard a story like this. This is a great ending to his story. Tragic that it comes at the very end of his life, and he didn't get to experience this as he lived in this world. The rich man, he dies, and, well, he goes somewhere else. So there again, we're not really rooting for him anyway, so there's a part of us that might be kind of like, yeah, he got that. He deserves that. But there's more to this story than just some sort of a vague description of heaven and hell. In fact, I'm not sure if there is much of a description of heaven and hell as we have a concept in this gospel. I think where we might be able to dig in a little bit more deeply into this parable that sounds predictable is when the rich man calls out to Abraham and asks Abraham to pass a note to Lazarus. By the way, does not talk to Lazarus directly ever, but says, Abraham, can you tell Lazarus to come down and take care of me? Because I'm suffering down here. I mean, that's cruel. That's gross. That is not good. And already we are continuing on this plane of rooting against this rich man who knows Lazarus' name. Which means that this person who's been living outside his gate, he knows him well enough to know his name. It means it knows him well enough to know just a little bit of his backstory that we don't even get to know. He knows enough about this guy who is suffering and dying on his gate to call out his name, feels comfortable enough to speak his name the way God speaks his name, but still stepped over him every day of his life and threw parties but never invited him in. There is a great chasm that exists between the rich man and Lazarus, and it was there long before Abraham ever gives it a name. There was always a divide. There was always this great gap, a hole in the yard, if you will, between the rich man up in his house and Lazarus who was down at the gate. Jesus calls on us to care for God's people. And we do that. And we have this sense and notion, and really it's truly a part of who we are as Trinity Lutheran Church. We are called to care for God's people. That's why we have these quilts. That's why we gather up all of these supplies and we do it lovingly, because we look forward to sending all of this out. It gets put in boxes, it gets put on trucks, it gets put in trains and planes and boats. It gets scattered to the earth. And we care for God's nameless and faceless who we will never get to know, but we give thanks that from what little we are able to gather, we are going to be able to care for God's people who are cold tonight. So we continue to strive. And at the same time, we know, because we're human, that there are holes in our yard. We know that there are gaps between ourselves and our neighbors. And the story that we have from the Gospels for today, this story is not so much about the nameless and the faceless who are far beyond our walls. This is about the people who we know. The names we know. Our classmates, our teammates, our bandmates, our co-workers, the folks we meet at the hospital, the folks we meet on the street, the folks who live two doors away from us. We know their name. And still, something within our minds writes them off. Creates the divide, creates that gap. We all have holes in our yards. This church has holes in its yard. We have chasms, we have divides, barriers, walls, obstacles, call it what we want. We create separation between ourselves and God's people. In our gospel, the rich man knows Lazarus' name. He knows him well enough to speak his name, but still he cannot see Lazarus as human. He cannot see Lazarus equally as a child of God. And Abraham responds, and by the way, Abraham, father of our faith, that's why he's in this story. Abraham, who's also a bit of a proxy for God, Abraham speaks Lazarus' name. A reminder to us that God knows our name. God knows your name. And God knows the name of our neighbor. We proclaim that every time we celebrate a baptism. Last night we had the great privilege as a church to participate in the baptism of Adrian Quintana. He was baptized in these waters. God spoke Adrian's name. That is a permanent, unbreakable promise that God makes with Adrian and makes with you and I every time we remember our baptism. God knows your name. And when God knows your name and speaks your name, it is no different than God proclaiming creation. When God speaks, life happens. God speaks Lazarus' name. Remarkably, even when God speaks Lazarus' name, the rich man is still somehow unfazed. This story is a challenge to us. Jesus is challenging the Pharisees. He's talking directly to them, but you know the disciples are always nearby. You know there's always crowds around. And here we are on a Sunday morning hearing Jesus tell this story to us. And Jesus is asking us where the holes are in our yard. Where's the holes, the chasms, the divides, the obstacles, the barriers that we create between ourselves and our neighbors, not just the nameless, faceless, but the people who we know, the people who we encounter, the people who we struggle to see as equally divine as God declares us. There is good news in this text, even as Jesus is challenging us. Part of that good news comes through Lazarus himself. Of course, he suffers in this life, and it's deeply tragic that any of God's people suffer in this life. Through all the suffering that he endures in this life, God has always been with him, and God scoops him up and brings him into compassion and justice, mercy. All that he has deserved all of his life, he receives this. And the good news in this text is that Jesus is telling us the story. Jesus is the one who speaks our name, your name, our neighbor's name. God speaks to us. God proclaims our name. God transforms our life. Jesus finds us where we are. And through the cross, Jesus closes the gap between us and God. All the barriers and obstacles we build to push God away, to push God's grace away, to push God's good news far from ourselves, the cross destroys all of that and brings us into the very presence of God. And it happens with a breath, it happens with a word, it happens with the splashing of water. And as the cross brings us close to God, the cross brings us close to our neighbors. And we're able to see again through our classmates, through our bandmates, through our teammates, through our co-workers, through folks who we will meet on the street this week, we are able to see the very presence of God working through those who maybe we in our past life, before we were encountered by Christ, we may have been prone to writing off. We see God in our neighbor. We hear God speak our neighbor's name. The same way that God speaks our name, the same transformational power that changes our lives is changing the lives of our neighbors. God at work. God proclaims a name. So Jesus gathers us into spaces like this, reminds us again of the gap that we create between ourselves and God and between ourselves and our neighbors. We're reminded again that we are loved by God. Jesus speaks a word of forgiveness and grace over our lives. We feel that relief. We feel that transformation. We feel how we are broken and rebuilt by God's love. And then Jesus sends us out, as he does every week, back out through the doors. Sends us out so that we can see God. We can recognize God in our neighbors. We can speak our neighbor's name. And we can be a glimpse, flawed as we may be, a glimpse of God's kingdom, Christ's presence, bringing forth grace, mercy, justice, and peace, all that our neighbors deserve today. Bring that forth into this community today. Amen.